Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. You know, as usual, technical difficulties to start the day. I've already tried to call Julio Pena, have not got an answer, but we're going to go ahead and try again. If not, then we'll just go ahead and move on to the next guest. I don't have time for this. Doesn't look like that's going to happen. Let's try one more time, and then we'll move on. This is set up through his promotion, so, and I've already confirmed. Let's just go ahead and we'll call our next guest. We'll bring him on a half hour early, and then we'll give Julio another try. It's kind of disappointing that this is happening right off the bat, but, you know, it is life, and the show must go on. Let's go ahead and call Paul Mastrova Jr. from PA Cage Fights.
Hello.
Hey, Paul, this is Don McGuire with The Fighter's Voice. I apologize for calling you a little bit early. Lion Fight set up an interview with a fighter. He's not answering his phone, so the live show and the show must go on, so I figured I'd move on to you, sir.
Oh, so we're going to be live now then?
We're live right now as we speak.
Oh, we're live right now. Okay. I wasn't ready for you, but...
I hope you don't mind, man. I put you on the spot. But,
no,
you know,
no, I get it. It's almost like when I have a fighter pull out, you know?
Yeah, you just got to move on. You know, we've known each other for quite a few years now. And
sure.
Something interesting that you're doing for a lot of fighters that are coming up in the sport, a lot of veterans in the sport, you're creating opportunities out there on the East Coast. What does PA Cage Fights truly mean to you, Paul?
You know, it's more of a hobby to me. I love seeing the success, you know. I love seeing them, you know, strive from an amateur debut to a pro debut. And, you know, we're spotlighting them. We're getting them in the main event on their pro debut on some cards. So, you know, cards like the upcoming one, we've got our main event and co-main event consisting of four pro debuts. So two guys are going to leave best day of their life, you know.
Most definitely. You know, I look back to the end of the year voting and this and that. You happen to have Sean Shorty Rock Santella, Nate Williams, Fight of the Year. What does it mean for your promotion to be able to put on these type of class shows and end up with that type of talent to where, you know, you look at Fight of the Year, I mean, you had several to choose from. I'm sure that decision was hard on your part, but what initially
really the fans picked that, you know. My MMA News was at the show. They covered probably hundreds of shows in 2017, and they picked what they thought were the best six, seven fights of the year, and the fans went to vote, and I mean, Santalian Williams won it by a landslide. You know, we had the number one flyweight in the Midwest versus the number one flyweight in the East Coast, and Nate did awesome in the fight. You know, sure he lost, but he knew what he was up against, and he got out of some dangerous spots that, you know, it looked like it was over four or five times, and he was very resilient and just kept taking the fight to Sean, and eventually Sean was able to finish him, but he didn't go out easy. I mean, it was just an amazing fight. Also, the submission of the year on the regional circuit came on the same show with Sean's teammate, Jim Fitzpatrick, had the craziest armbar finish I've ever seen in my life. I don't know if you saw the video, but that won submission of the year, so... some crazy things happened at PA Cage Fight 29.
Yeah, you know, I love PA Cage Fights. For one, you know, there's a lot of organizations that come by. You know, as we all know in this business, there's a lot of fly-by-night businesses that come up, pop up. They don't last very long. They don't treat their fighters very well. You can't say that about PA cage fights. You talk about it, you know, you say it's a hobby. But when you look at what you're doing for individuals, not just in the sport, but in life, the creativity and the passion, you know, it kind of feels to me that there's a little bit more than a hobby in this for you as far as your heart and your passion go. Would I be correct?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You know, like our 135 champ, Tony Gravely, right now, you know, he's 12-4 as a professional. I've been working my ass off trying to get this kid signed by the UFC. You know, could I have him back for another fight and pack the place because he's on the card? Absolutely. But, you know, I want to see them go as far as possible, you know. I'd love for all of our champions to be in the UFC or, you know, fighting in Russia for huge purses or Bellator, wherever it might take them. You know, we'd like to think of ourselves as a stepping stone while giving the fans, you know, UFC-quality fights. And, you know, a lot of our main events, that's where they've been. You know, we had some crazy fights in 2017. We won promotion of the year, which is, I mean, if you would have told me January 1st, 2017 that, all right, let's do this, we're going to win promotion of the year, I probably wouldn't have thought that would be the case, you know, not knocking any of the other promotions that we're up against. You know, they're all very fine promotions, but we take it more into a community. You know, people know the fights are in Wilkes-Barre, it's a cage fight, they're coming out. You know, we don't need to go all high and mighty and be on TV and have Titantrons and smoke and video productions. It's just about being honest and putting out a good product and matching the fights evenly and, you know, giving the fighters what we promised them. You know, that's what promotion of the year is, and, you know, that's what we worked at. So,
well, when you look at promotion of the year, you know, I'll take it back just a little bit more for my listeners and for the people that know you. You know, one thing that I've never seen come out of your organization is you try to Jew the fighters down. You try to give the fighters the least amount of pay possible. That's one thing you won't see out of PA cage fights is I had fighters that had actually fought on your cards before.
Yeah.
And you pay your fighters quite well. Is that part of the mystique of your promotion is to do away
with
all
the it is. You know, except for the big four that, you know, are on live on Spike TV and Fox Sports 1 and all that, I really think we do pay up for our fighters. You know, we give them what they're worth. You know, they're sacrificing a lot. They're missing work. They're traveling. They're cutting weight. They're buying expensive food. You know, to pay a fighter, you know, $200 as a pro fighter, I mean, that's just bullshit, and we don't stand up for that, you know. We, without going into numbers, we take very, very good care of our fighters. So it's very important.
I was going to go into numbers, bro.
No fight.
But I can attest to you take very good care of your fighters. You know, I won't go into numbers either, but I know this for a fact. And I think, you know, because I'm in the Midwest, you know, and your name is starting to reach out here more and more and more, and the promotion is starting to grow. When you initially started this promotion, Paul, now that you kind of look back over your shoulder, did you ever see it, you know, portraying itself to what it is today?
Well, I can't speak of when it originally started because that was Chris Coyne, who's my partner now. And with PA Cage Fight, the first ever sanctioned mixed martial arts event in Pennsylvania happened. And that was in a 6,000-person venue, and it was sold out. But again, that was when it was the new thing. You know, they couldn't see it anywhere else. Obviously, the dip came, and since 2012, it's been getting bigger and better and stronger than ever. So, you know, I'd like to think that, you know, we're only getting bigger, and, you know, 30th show is quite the milestone. Our 31st show is 6 weeks after this show, so we're not wasting any time. And, you know, the goal is to bring 7 to 8 shows this year to Pennsylvania.
Most definitely. You know, 2018 is a new year. You're already talking about some shows coming up. What do you have, you know, that's right around the corner for the fans, the people listening that are...
A lot of good stuff coming up. A lot of good stuff. 2 weeks Saturday is February 10th. That's going to be PA Cage Fight 30 at the Woodlands in Wilkes-Barre. We know you had your fighter, Shelby Graham, when I met you. He fought at the Woodlands. He loved it. It's a great place for the fans. It's a great place for the fighters. You know, it's a resort. A lot of fighters go, they get checked into their hotel rooms and promotions, and, you know, they're at, like, Motel 6 or something. You know, we're checking our fighters into a 4- or 5-star resort here. all the restaurants, entertainment, bars, clubs, weigh-ins, the fights, everything's all in one venue. The casino's across the street, so the fighters love that. We have a hell of a main event with Malik Mahmoud, 4-0 as an amateur. Three of those four wins were by KO within 30 seconds of the first round, so he certainly proved his worth. He's training out of NEPA MMA, owned by Kyle Reed. His head coach is Jimmy Hettis and his brother Chris Hettis, so he's well-trained. On the other side of that fight, we got 7-3 Aaron Kennedy, making his pro debut out of Bloomsburg MMA and Suite of Muay Thai. These two really don't like each other, too. And, you know, I hate to promote the grudge match, but, you know, they really don't like each other. I mean, both are so confident that, you know, the fight's going to go their way very quickly. And you and I both know that leads to a hell of a fight for the fans. So, you know, obviously you want the fighters confident. And, you know, at weigh-ins, we're going to have some extra security because, like I said, these guys really don't like each other. But it's going to be a hell of a main event. Co-main event, I'm really excited for this fight. We got Mattia Fonda making his pro debut. He's out your way. Real nice kid. Versus Jim Fitzpatrick out of Miller Brothers MMA. Jim is 4-0 at PA Cage Fight. Just had the submission of the year on the last show. He's a complete beast. And then
yeah,
we have some crazy
on the ground, bro.
What's that?
I said he's a beast on the ground. I think he's a well-rounded fighter.
Yeah, he's a black belt under Jim Miller, Miller Brothers MMA. So, you know, they don't mess around when they trade at Miller Brothers MMA. You know, Mattia's been working his ass off too, so he's ready to rock. We got a top fighter out of Ohio, Marcus Crawford, 5-1, challenging another Miller Brothers fighter, Joe Tizzano, 4-0. Tizzano won the featherweight title last card at PA Cage Fight 29. Tizzano was actually up for Amateur Fighter of the Year. I think he came in third place. He fought on three of our shows last year, and all three were knockout wins, so he's a monster. That's going to be an amazing fight. And then turning right around after this is, you know, PA Cage Fight 31. And I can't even tell you, Don, but we've got a fighter returning on that card that is just going to – it's going to stop Wilkes-Barre that night. Everybody's coming out to see this guy when we announce it. I'm going to announce it at the show. You know, nobody really sees it coming, but this is a huge return. It's big for our area. And then we got undefeated prospect Jake Kozorowski fighting pro in March. He's 2-0 as a professional, 9-0 as an amateur. I don't really see anyone beating him for quite some time, but, you know, I know he's going to be up for a challenge. We have Bellator vet Lewis Rumsey on that card. We've got a very high-impact 185er returning to fight on that card, Chris Cataldo. So, you know, there's certainly a lot of talent on the March 31st show, too. You know, we're going, you know, more pros on the March show. We have a bigger venue. So, it's, you know, a lot to look forward to in the next 10 weeks.
Most definitely. You almost make me wish I lived in the same city as you. You know, I've been in this business a long time, and, you know, everybody thinks that because I've shot for the UFC and Bellator and Invicta and other top promotions that those are the places that I prefer to go to. And that isn't fact. You know, I like these new young and up-and-comers, these veterans that are trying to give it a second wind in their career. I like promotions like the one you've built, you know, because it truly exemplifies the sport for what it is. And it takes a tremendous amount of work, you know, and that's kind of what I wanted to slide back into. You know, this business is harsh. You know, a lot of people will say it'll chew you up and spit you out. Yeah, it is.
Oh, yeah.
So what initially led you, Paul, into wanting to be in this aspect of the sport?
You know what the crazy thing is, and he knows the reason why, it's Jimmy Hettis. I grew up with Jimmy Hettis, and, you know, he made his run, made it to the UFC. I didn't even watch MMA, like literally did not watch MMA at all. The first UFC card I ever watched is when Jimmy Hettis made his UFC debut against, trying to blank now, with Bruce Leroy, Alex Caceres. First time I ever watched UFC was that, and I went to a few of his regional fights here on the regional circuit, and I'm thinking, wow, this is really interesting, and I kept watching it, and I said, you know, I want to do this, you know, this is cool, you know. I saw how he grew into it and evolved through it. I said, I want to do that. You know, I want to get some fighters and let's see what we can do. And, you know, after the second year, I was pretty much almost like saying the hell with this, but the last 2 years have been outstanding. So we're just going to keep going. You know, we got fight week coming up in 2 weeks. You know, that's harder than fight day. You know, you always got the last one, took the wrong blood test or didn't fax the right form over or lost their MMA ID. But, you know, for every bad one, there's 10 good ones. So we get
exactly.
Everyone cleared, everyone licensed.
You know, the one thing that really gets me is, you know, I'll use Andrea KGB Lee as an example. Had fought for Legacy multiple times, actually in RFA too, and before they merged, and actually was fighting for Invicta multiple times, was a champion, and then goes out to fight for Invicta in Vegas, and all of a sudden she gets banned from the sport for a year because she, you know, is a woman and she had to take a water pill, and I guess in some states it's legal, some states it's not. Well, you go under the Nevada State Commission, you're dealing with a bunch of other parameters. Do you think that it would be much easier for promoters like yourself if the United States would just get on a national program? Do you think it would allow things to be that much smoother for your promotion and for your fighters?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, we all worry about weights and weight cuts and, you know, do you want to see someone die cutting weight on your promotion? Absolutely not, you know. Commissioner Serb, Pennsylvania Athletic Commission, had some great ideas at the last conference, but, you know, I'm not sure where we're going. I know that I'm fortunate enough to have Davey Four weigh-ins, but that might be going away shortly. That's the talk, so I'm hoping that doesn't happen because I hate to see them cut weight and then fight in the same day.
That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, well, this is on the amateurs, but still.
Yeah. You know, because you look at situations that just like happened last weekend, or actually the weekend before, I should say, with Zach Cummings, you know, cutting weight, gets out of the tub, he slips, cracks his head open, and can't fight the next day. You know, and then you got other fighters that have had, you know, such major weight cut issues as Sajara Eubanks, who ended up in the hospital with almost kidney failure. Do you think that...
I've been there with the fighters. I mean, I've been in the sauna with fighters before. It's brutal to see that firsthand, especially when it's your local that you're good friends with. And, you know, you're in the sauna with them thinking, like, they're going to faint, and we got weigh-ins in 3 hours. I've seen it firsthand. It's not pretty. I hate weight cutting.
Well, you know, the point I was trying to get at is, you know, I think that the UFC kind of came up with somewhat of a good idea. They haven't truly implemented it yet. You know, you got some fighters that fight at 170 but walk around at, you know, 220, 230. You know, making that type of cut is crucial and critical to a body. Do you think that they should have more well-defined weight classes or force a fighter if you're closer to, like, let's say the fighter that's at 230, you know, have them fight at light heavyweight instead of letting them fight at 170? I mean, I think it would do the sport justice. I think it would do the fighter justice, but I've never got a promoter's opinion on that aspect.
I think there needs to be some more weight classes or at least spread it out a little bit. Why is there no 165? I have no idea. Going from lightweight to welterweight's a huge jump, and, you know, you got the guy that weighs 185. He's almost forced to fight at 155 because if he fights at 170, he's fighting a guy that weighs 195 pounds, 200 pounds, so... I think some more weight classes would be the answer. If it was up to me, which clearly it's not, I'm just a small piece of the puzzle, I would like to see 25, 35, 45, 55, 65, 75, 85, and then maybe 195, then heavyweight. But not to knock the light heavyweights, but it just kind of makes more sense. But, you know, you got heavyweights that weigh more than light heavyweights. Light heavyweights, rather, that weigh more than heavyweights. You know, natural cut. Stipe Miocic, you know, he walks at 240, weighs in at 240. You got 205ers cutting to that. So I think that's an area that needs to be addressed as well.
Yeah, you know, he surprised me in the Nagano fight, you know, here for
some
reason.
Yeah, but if he goes against a heavyweight with some better cardio, it's going to be a problem. Like, they're talking about a super fight, him versus DC. DC would murder him. You know, he's just going to grind him out. And I'm not really a big DC fan.
Yeah, Nagano had the gas tank of a Hot Wheel, man. I mean, it just...
Oh, yeah. That was Dad at 5,000 twice over that fight. I actually had to pay for that card, too. That was brutal. But, $30 gets you a ticket to see a cage fight, and it'll certainly be more exciting than that card was.
Most definitely. And that's kind of what I want to get back on. You know, we talked about a couple shows that you got coming up. What would PA cage fights ultimately like to see their promotion be? Where would you like to see your promotion be by the end of the year? I mean, you're steadily growing.
Well, it's a show that I've teased now for 2 years, and every time I get the balls to do it, I just forget I just say more or less forget it. But what I really want to do, Don, I want to do an all-pro, all-advanced show. And, you know, I love amateur debuts, don't get me wrong. One, they sell a lot of tickets, you know, because everybody's wanting to see what they got. And two, they surprise a lot of people. You know, the winner of an amateur debut fight, it's, you know, they've made a name for themselves. But I would love to do a card with, you know, 4 or 5 advanced rules, no shin pad amateur fights, and 7 or 8 pro fights on it. But, you know, there's a formula to it. You know, if the fight doesn't make sense, the fight doesn't make sense. So, you know, that would definitely be something I'd like to put on. We have a real big show coming up in June, so big that I really can't announce it yet, but it's going to be a Sunday show in June, which is going to be phenomenal. Not many Sunday shows happen, but the right opportunities are there, and we're going to jump all over it.
Yeah, see, you know what, it's funny because we like I said, we've had dealings in the past, and I've brought my fighters to you, and I've, you know, and got others interested in your promotion because of, you know, what you're building out there in Wilkes Bar. You know, it's a tremendous attribute when you see a promoter that is like you and your partner, that truly believe in the sport, that truly care about the fighters. When you stepped into it, as he initially had the cage fights, was that an agreement that you both came upon? Let's do this right. Let's pave the road for these fighters. Let's make it a stand-up sport, because PA cage fights truly is gaining a name in that aspect and the respect-wise.
Yeah, 100%. Our goal at the end of every event is every fighter's leaving happy. Sure, 14 of them are going to be pissed off because unless there's a draw, 14 are losing. But we want them to leave happy. You know, we want our job to be done whether they win or lose, you know. And that's not something we can control if we're not ahead of it, you know. Being honest with matchmaking, I mean, I'll never throw somebody in there with them asking, like, oh, what belt ranks my opponent? If I know the answer, I'm telling you it. If I don't know it, I'm telling you it, you know. I never want somebody to, you know, go to fight somebody and they get put in an anaconda choke or something and go, what the hell, I thought he was a white belt. So, you know, we match everything honestly and evenly. Ticket commissions, you know.
Kind of break it up there just a little bit.
Oh, I said my wife does all of our graphics. I'm sure you've seen our posters and videos online. She spends countless hours on them, you know, really promoting the fighters, getting their name out. So, you know.
I was going to ask you, because it has to be a blessing having your wife help you in your promotion, because, you know, you look at a lot of us that are in this sport and our significant others aren't in it with us. How tremendous or how grateful are you to be able to have your family involved in something that you have a passion for?
Well, it's good and bad. You know, when stuff needs to really get done, we always argue over it because it's so much work. But it's great that she does it, you know. I mean, my God, find a graphic designer to do it, forget about it. But she, and the thing is, she's a perfectionist, so she's not going to put something out that's not up to our standards, you know. So many times, and she'll even make me realize, she'll say, like, do you really want us to put this out? Is this what our image is? Where, you know, fighters are sending the selfie and it's all granulated, pixelated. You know, it's, you know, she's really high standards with it. And obviously, just like anything, starting from PAKH by 18 to 30, I think our graphics have gotten nicer and better throughout. So, you know, a lot of time spent with that. It's tedious for her, but we know we're putting out a good product and the fighters really respect that.
Most definitely. Now, do you see yourself as an organization expanding out of the Wilkes-Barre area and
yeah,
other places?
Yeah, certainly. I don't want to go into Philly. I don't want to go into, you know, the bigger markets. I have no interest in Pittsburgh, no interest in Philly, no interest in Allentown. I mean, Wilkes-Barre is our stable. You know, Scranton, not a bad idea. We've done a few shows in Scranton the last few years. Not ruling out Bloomsburg, not ruling out Williamsport, and not ruling out Hazleton. but why fix it if it's not broken? I mean, this is going to be our 10th show in a row that's sold out at the Woodlands. I have friends calling me every day looking for seats. I don't have any left. I haven't had a seat. I have not had a seat in my hand for the show in 2 weeks. So, you know, it's kind of like, why fix it if it's not broken?
Exactly. That's the problem. I think everybody.
And that's the thing
would
too. Like,
to
we
have.
Actually lowered our ticket prices for this card. You know, beginning of the year, people are still recovering from Christmas. We're gonna our front row is gonna sell out whether they're $200, $100, or $75. We made them $75. You know, we want people to come out. You know, right down to the cursing and the walkout songs, we don't put up with it. None. We don't want fans. We don't want kids to come out. You know, kids that are in BJJ programs, karate programs. They come out. They see these fights. They love it. You know, a lot of these kids that are in these programs now could be in the cage in 12, 15 years. So we want to make it family friendly.
Yes, most definitely. You know, there's been a surge of promotions that have kind of theoretically still gone with tickets, but they've gone with the sales in a different aspect. You know, you look at Fight to Win promotions and a couple other promotions that charge by the carload, you know, and just to fill the house to make it look like it's full every time. Do you think that that takes away from an event? Or
I think that that is weak as hell. If I had to do that, I wouldn't do this, to be honest with you. You know, I've heard of promotions in my area, in my state, running in bars and just dropping off 20 tickets, 30 tickets. Here, come on out, there's fights tonight. To be completely honest with you, if I had to do that, I'm failing. You know, that's just
you know,
my
the reason
opinion.
I ask is because, you know, I feel the same way. I think $20 a carload and, you know, yeah,
no.
your stadium's filled up and the vendors, you're getting a commission of the vendor sales or whatever, but, you know,
absolutely.
Are you truly throwing an event? You know, you're just in it for the money. And
no, anybody,
really
anybody could have 1,000 people at their event. Only PA Cage Fight could sell 1,000 tickets in Pennsylvania.
Exactly. You know, when I look at your promotion, like we spoke about earlier, it's always been a tremendous promotion in my eyes. I don't really brag about too many promotions. I'm transparent. I truly call it as it is. What was it, you know, when you sit back, you initially stepped into this because, of, like you said, the UFC fighter. What has kept you doing it and striving to continue to do it? I mean, like we talked about, this sport will eat you up. It'll spit you out. There has to be a hidden passion that truly has you in it, Paul, for the right reasons. You give every fighter the benefit of the doubt. You're giving people, I guess the best way to say it, a pathway in life to become a better person. What do you truly take away from doing these events?
It really is the fighters. I mean, there's probably 5 solid gyms that I deal with, that we deal with for all these cards. And I love seeing these guys emerge. You know, Team Vicious in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, owned by John Powell, coached with Diggs and Coach Rumsey. I mean, they always have such good talent. They got a kid, Stefan Jaskowiak, lost his amateur debut at our Scranton show, came back last show and just looked unstoppable. And he would have won his debut fight too, but he got caught in submission. I mean, just seeing kids like that emerge, you know, like now Stefan's fighting for a title on this card. You know, it's huge. You know, between Miller Brothers MMA, Bloomsburg MMA, Pride Lands, Tri-State MMA, you know, Rat Pack, it's just getting the fighters from these gyms is just phenomenal. And, you know, knowing that they're waiting for another PA Cage fight to put their fighters on cards. You know, dealing with Sean Santala, PJ Sweeta, Joel Knott, John Powell, Harry Brofsky. I mean, we deal with the best names in the state where we get our fighters from. So, you know, Jason Ratchford, you know, there's Jimmy Hettis, Kyle Reed. You know, it's just a lot of it's a lot of good relationships, and, you know, I like seeing succeeding. You know, our flyweight champ, Sean Santala, should be in the UFC. It's bullshit he's not. Our 135 champ, Tony Gravely, is number one on the East Coast. I don't know what they're waiting for to sign him. He's young, too. I mean, to have 12-4 at age 23, Division I wrestler, I mean, he's got to be getting signed soon. We've already sent 6 or 7 fighters to the UFC, so I think the ultimate goal is just seeing that happen. Like, our main event with Malik and Kennedy, I mean, one's going to take a loss and rebuild from it, and one's going to take a loss and just emerge. Because, I mean, anybody could take a pro debut, but, I mean, this is like 1-2 in the amateur rankings going against each other. They didn't take the easy road. And I don't like to take the easy road either. And that would be giving away tickets just to fill a venue.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. But, you know, one thing, there are people watching your promotion because there was a fighter that we talked about earlier. I can't divulge the promotion. You know, he got Fight of the Year in your promotion. But now he's headed back to the Big Show when he was contemplating retirement. So, you know, it just shows a tremendous attribute to PA Cage Fights and what they're doing for the fighters. You know, you're giving, you know, some veterans opportunities to shine again. And that the second chance sometimes is all a fighter truly needs in life. And that's what your promotion does. And it's just profound words about you and your partner. If you had to surmise a statement about PA Cage Fights for my listeners and why they should come out to one of your shows, what would that statement be, my friend?
The statement is they're going to get exactly what's advertised. You know, if we're advertising 14 live mixed martial arts fights that are evenly matched, you know, we could lose one or two on the scale, sure, but you're going to get damn close to what we're advertising. You know, we very, very rarely lose fights. You know, once our programs are printed on Fight Week, what's on there always happens. You know, we've never lost a pro fight due to weight. One, and that was maybe 5 years ago. We had a 145 fight fall off. It was just a feature fight, but, you know, we're very consistent on our bookings. You know, we're very selective who we allow to fight. You know, I have a lot of people reaching out to me, hey, I want to fight on the card, and you find out they don't train in the gym. You know, we don't go with the independent fighters. You know, we got to know their coach, know they're really a fighter. We don't want to see someone get killed in our cage. And likewise, we don't want to see a boring fight in our cage. So we excitement, family-friendly, and just a guaranteed good time, good night out in Wilkes-Barre.
I have to agree with you. As I said, my fighter, Shelby Shogun Graham, has been on there several times, and it's truly been a blessing each and every time.
The best ever.
Yeah. Well, you know, hopefully he'll get his head, you know, screwed back on straight. You know, he had that incident with his family that kind of devastated him for a little bit.
Double dose twice in a year. That was brutal.
Yeah,
but
you know, but I see him slowly coming back. I'm still in communication with him, so hopefully
He would have done amazing as a Muay Thai fighter because, you know, he's got the spinning kicks and the spinning fists and all that. Not so much a ground guy, but just a tough kid. He's nearly impossible to finish. So he's a hell of a fighter.
Yeah, that's why I kind of signed him. He kind of grew on me too, you know. You know, Paul, it was tremendous to have you on the show today. I run my show in 30-minute segments. I would love to have you back on, you know, right before one of your shows and possibly bring on some of your fighters and interview them. You know, I think it's tremendous what you're doing up there and with PA Cage Fights. I'm going to hand the microphone over to you. If you got any sponsors or anything else you'd just like to add to the program, my friend, the floor is yours.
I appreciate it. And, of course, without sponsors, you know, it would make it a lot harder to do, so I would like to thank our sponsors, and if I forget some, sorry, but you all matter. We've got Legendary Auto Works in Oliphant, Pennsylvania. We've got Rainbow Jewelers in Kingston, Pennsylvania. We're now brought on a new sponsor, Modella Especial. They also just signed a big contract with the UFC, and they chose PA Cage Fight as their Pennsylvania location. So, Modella Especial, you're welcome to PA Cage Fight. We're going to get your name out there. We got Nicole's Barbershop in New Jersey. We have Fellerman and Ceramboli Law. They've got offices in Kingston and Philadelphia. We've got Mattioli and Munley Law out of Scranton, Pennsylvania. The official tattoo shop of PA Cage Fight is Art Rage Tattoo Studio. All of our sponsors, Jakubowski Painting, new sponsor to the show this time. He's in Kingston, Edwardsville area. So all of our sponsors have been with us through the years. We appreciate it, and we know we get their money's worth out of them. So, you know, we make sure they see a good return. And Green Rhino Builders, a good friend of mine, Alan Morrow, longtime sponsor. So I want to shout out to him and thank him for all the sponsoring. So really we've got a lot. We've got sponsors that wanted to be on this card that we just don't have seats for because it sold that quick. So we'll be getting some new sponsors next show, but, you know, they're all out there this show. And, of course, I want to thank all the fighters and coaches. You know, 28 fighters getting ready to go to war in just over 2 weeks. So it's going to be a good show. Maybe we could talk some results after the show.
I would love that, my friend, you know, because what you truly are doing, you know, first and foremost, I just don't bring any promoter on. I don't bring any promotion on unless I believe in them. And, you know, I've dealt with you for the last couple of years, and you truly are changing the way the sport should be looked at. You're doing it the right way, and you I commend you on the abilities and what you bring into the sport. You truly have, you know, changed the way the sport is seen on the East Coast, and your name is getting bigger, and the promotion is getting out there, and you're changing lives. With that being said, it's been a true honor to have you on today's show, my friend.
I appreciate it, Don. We'll talk soon, buddy.
All right, buddy. Thank you. God bless.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was the owner of PAKH Life, Paul Mastrelva, Jr. Tremendous guy. He truly is. I've had my fighters on his card. He's truly one hell of a promoter, and you need to go check out PAKH Life in Wilkes-Barre. They do tremendous jobs, and they pay their fighters quite well. We're going to go ahead and try to give Julio Pena a call and see what happens.
Hello?
Hey, Julio, this is Don McGuire with the Fighter's Voice. How you doing, my friend?
Hey, Don, how are you? Sorry I missed the call earlier. I'm at work, and I'm kind of trying to do things in between, getting some stuff done here at work.
Oh, do you need to reschedule?
No. How long do you need me on the phone for?
We generally run about 25, 30 minutes, my friend.
Ooh, I'd probably be good for about 15 to 20, unfortunately.
Okay, that's fine. We'll just go ahead and take it from there.
All right, sorry about that, Don.
Oh, no problem, buddy. You're fighting under the Lion Fights, you know, Lion Fight promotion banner. What does it truly mean to you, Julio, to get that call? Because I know you haven't been in the sport very long. To get a call from a promotion like that had to be something that kind of took you back a little bit. What did that phone call mean to you, my friend?
It was everything to me. I started doing Thai boxing a while back, and I never thought about going pro. And back in 2014, received a call from my trainer asking me about trying a pro fight, going for a pro fight. I said, with who? He said, Lion Fight. They were looking for a pro debut. And I said, absolutely, let's give it a shot. Let's go for it. I was excited. They're the number one Muay Thai promotion in the country. Still growing. They're doing awesome. And I'm lucky to be fighting for them.
Most definitely. You know, you're sitting at 3-0. And, you know, I kind of want to talk about your trainer for a moment. Bill Nuke Dog Nukem is kind of changing the face for Muay Thai in the United States. He's created a tremendous attribute in his fighters. When you look at Bill Nuke Dog Nukem, what has he taught you, and what does it truly mean to have that type of relationship?
It's his passion for his students. He has a lot of passion for the art, absolutely. But the passion that he has for each and every one of us, be it a fighter, non-fighter, just a student that comes in wanting to get into shape, his passion comes out, and he puts everything he has into it, which in turn forces us, his students, to put everything we have into it. And I think that's the leading cause of everything that's happening with Bill now. He's not only our instructor, he's not only our crew, he's also our friend. A lot of the conversations that he has with me and a lot of the other fighters is on a friendship level. Obviously, when we're in the gym, we're hitting pads, we're getting ready for fights, he's our trainer, he's our instructor, he's our crew, he's pushing us. But in between that, he's a friend. He's calling us, how you doing, how you feeling. And I think that's what's helping a lot of us grow and really fight to our full potential.
Most definitely. Now, there's a side of you that, you know, I kind of admire. You know, a lot of fighters in this sport, you know, base their income just based on fighting. And, you know, you hear a lot of people complain, you know, I'm in the gym all the time, blah, blah, blah. Here you are a fighter, but you're also a deputy sheriff. How much passion do you have for the sport that it allows you to basically maintain two full-time jobs?
The sport itself changed my life. The art itself changed my life. Prior to starting Muay Thai, just worked all the time. I drank, smoked cigarettes. I wasn't in the best shape. And getting into Thai boxing changed my life. I became healthier, obviously, and it kind of gave me a goal. Okay, you know what? I want to get in shape. Great. I felt great. I started getting in shape. Okay, you know what? I want to try a fight or two, see how I could do. I want to test myself. That worked. Next thing you know, I just continued the fight. And it's not easy. Having two full-time jobs is absolutely not easy. I went pro the year I got married, actually a month apart. I got married, and a month later I fought my first professional fight. The time management, the discipline is not easy. It's absolutely not easy. And when I talk to younger kids, younger guys coming up in the sport, that's what I tell them. I say, if you don't love it, it's hard to grow in it. You have to really love it. You have to enjoy the sport. I don't only enjoy the sport and the fighting, but I love the camaraderie, the respect. And that's what I think I've been able to stick around with it for so long now.
Yes, most definitely. You know, one thing that amazed me about you is you love close quarters combinations. You know, generally in a Muay Thai fight, you know, the elbows, the strikes, you know, you try to merely stay away from them to save your jaw, you know, and getting knocked down on your rear end. What is it about being in the mix that has you thriving in this sport?
I think I'm such a small and compact individual that getting inside is where I could generate the most power. I could generate the most aggression and just do what I do. I don't mind being inside at all. I love throwing inside combinations. I love the elbows. And I could get in and out as fast as I can. Again, being so small and compact, I'm being 5'8", fighting at 135 pounds. I'm very agile, able to move, get in, get my combinations in, move out, move back in. And I kind of limits my damage, the damage I could sustain. I'll be turning 40 later on this year, and I have to fight smart. I have to fight without gaining too much, getting too much damage, and getting inside, throwing. I'm not afraid to get hit. Sometimes you have to get hit to hit somebody, and that's the mentality I go into every fight with.
Yeah, you know, I look at this publication, Fight of the Week, Julio Pena with one of the best KOs, and it shows you in a video with Tom Evans. What when you saw that, how did it make you feel about your progression in the sport?
It made me feel good. It everything I worked on that fight, I actually performed. Getting in close, avoiding shots from the outside and making a miss, and then stepping in and doing what I have to do. So that's what I enjoyed, knowing that, you know what I worked on, I just stuck to it and went in and did what I had to do and do my job. And that aspect felt great. It really felt good.
No, I looked, but correct me if I'm wrong, but you're also fighting on February 3rd, correct?
I'm sorry, on February 3rd, yes.
Yes. Now, of course, the way the internet is set up, they really don't give Muay Thai guys too much retrospect on their records for finding it. You know, who will you be facing? And this is kind of embarrassing for me because I tried to find it. Who will you be facing come February 3rd at Foxwoods?
I'll be fighting Isaac Tijerina. I don't know really much about him. I've seen a little bit of video on him. He's fought online fight before, one time before that I know of. One of my former opponents that I had fought, and saw a little bit of video on him. I try not to focus too much on videos and researching tape and stuff like that on fighters, because everybody has a plan. You get into the ring and they might have did something different. So I kind of just prepare to fight. And I think this is going to be a really good fight for both Isaac and myself. I have a lot of respect for Isaac. He, when given the opportunity to get into the ring with me, he jumped at it. And I, you know, ton of respect for him for that. I'm actually looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to meeting him and getting into the ring and showing everybody what Muay Thai is all about.
Absolutely, because Lion Fights is tremendous. You know, I couldn't believe the day I was driving back from Glory MMA and Fitness out there in Lee Summit with James Krause, and I did a show the night before with Antonio McKee, and Scott Zur called me and offered me, you know, this opportunity to interview some of his fighters and asked me what it would take. And I'm like, bro, are you kidding me? I'm a traditionalist, you know. This is what I love. What led you, Julio, down the traditional path? What made you love this aspect of the sport so much?
The sport itself has a lot of respect. It has a lot of tradition. It's a culture. And I think that's what I enjoy about it, the camaraderie. Being in law enforcement, there's a lot of camaraderie, and I think it naturally pulled me in that direction. you know, that when you bow to somebody before a fight, after the fight, you show each other respect. You don't see a lot of trash talking in Muay Thai. You're trying to get under people's skin, disrespecting each other. No, there's none of that. You go into the ring, you show your skills, you do the best you can. Sometimes people get hurt. But after that, you're calling each other, making sure you're okay. Hey, great fight. I hope everything works out for you. I hope you have an excellent career. I hope you heal up fast. I hope, and that's, I think, one of the things that I appreciate the most. It's the culture and the tradition behind Muay Thai.
Most definitely. I just have a couple more questions for you, brother, and then we'll let you get back.
No problem. No problem.
You know, when you look back in life, sometimes we look over our shoulder and we get a reflection of our life. Who was Julio Pena before he even considered or thinking about any type of mixed martial art, for that matter? What type of person were you, and how was life for you growing up?
I was just your typical average person, trying to make a living, working and make enough money to enjoy life and maybe travel and buy a nice car and so on. And then getting into Thai boxing kind of taught me a whole different monster. It taught me, you know what, there's more than just materialistic things. Now I was able to meet my wife in the gym. My wife has fought amateur, and we share that same passion. And I'm glad the day that I walked into the gym and I met Bill Newcomb and I started training with him, because that's the day that my life changed. Where I am, I would never be where I am now if it wasn't for that day. And I still continue to grow. I've been doing this now since 2007, almost 10 years. I've only been fighting pro for approximately 4 years, and I'm still growing. I'm still learning. And I say it all the time, but I've enjoyed the journey. I've enjoyed to where I am now, and this is what I hope to do now in the future is to pass that on to future generations, to the young up and comers. Tell them, enjoy the process. The fight only lasts a few minutes, but what you're going to remember is the process. You're going to remember how you got here and everything you put into it, the blood, sweat, and tears. And that's what you're going to remember, and that's what you're going to appreciate.
Most definitely, my friend. You know, Scott Zur and Scott Kent and Lion Fight Promotions is a tremendous organization, one of the largest and growing in the world. You know, when you got that call, it left you speechless. You know, it's a tremendous feeling. Mm-hmm. What has made you decide to fight only under the Lion Fights banner? Is that promotion really to you where you're going to consider spending the rest of your career and calling home?
Yeah. Yes. After my second fight, when I fought Tom Evans, I was offered a contract, an exclusive contract, which I accepted. And there was a couple different things that came into play. One is my age, obviously. I don't have a lot of time left in the sport when it comes down to actively competing. Again, been doing this 10 years. I'll be 40 I'm 39 now. I'll be 40 in September. And I'm looking now to start learning how to change over to a different role as an instructor, as a trainer, versus a competitor, due to the fact of, one, my age. I'm fighting kids, young men that are half my age, who probably don't have the full-time jobs or don't have the other distractions such as I do. And I think it's if I'm going to finish off my career, it's going to be with one of the top promotions in the country, if not the top promotion in the country, which is Lion Fight. I've enjoyed fighting for them. They treat us absolutely amazing, and they continue to get better. And the day that I say, you know what, I'm hanging up my gloves, this is it, it'll be with Lion Fight.
Most definitely is. You know, Scott Kent's a hell of a guy, and I had Chip Mirazapollard on yesterday. He did an interview with me yesterday, and each and every one that fights for Lion Fight says the same exact words to a T. You know, and you got to commend these guys on that. You know, brother, I know it's a busy day for you. So what I'm going to do, first and foremost, I would like to have you on again down the road, maybe after your fight. I'll get a hold of Scott Zur and we'll schedule so we can have a longer interview with you, because there's so many layers to you. But first and foremost, I want to thank you for joining the show. But secondly, I'm going to hand the microphone over to you. If there's any sponsors, friends or family, social media, or just anything you'd like to add to the program, the floor is yours, my friend.
Awesome, Don. I really appreciate you having me on. I really appreciate it. spreading the word of Muay Thai and the art is a huge passion of mine. I'm hoping that it could do for other people what it did for me and changing my life in a positive way. When it comes down to promotions such as Lion Fight, get out there. I would like for everybody to get out there and support your local fighters. People put so much into training and time away from their families, that having certain people or having people at a fight just supporting you and cheering your name goes an extremely long way. And then when you have extra support system, sponsors and managers and so on, and your trainers, we have to thank them. I have Bill Newcomb, huge impact on my life, trainer, best friend. I wouldn't be where I am without him. My wife, Amy, who supports me, who helps me and has been there by my side since day one. And then my manager, Prime Elite Management, and the partners and sponsors, Prime and Ready Meals, who have fueled me and helped me get ready for my fights, lose the weight that I need, keep me energized for all my training, Nugent Sound, who I can't train without music. They definitely help. Cryotherapy. So we've had a lot of help. I've had a lot of help, and a couple of them, my teammates, have gotten a lot of help getting ready for their fights. And we couldn't do it without them. It's only one person in the ring fighting, but it takes a whole village to get us ready. And if it wasn't for everybody, it'd be a lot more difficult.
I love that analogy, my friend, because it is so true, you know. One last thing I got, you know, where can my listeners and people that are looking to follow you find you on social media, my friend?
I'm on Facebook at the Don Julio Pena. I'm on Instagram and Twitter at the Don Julio Pena. Follow me. I don't post a lot of stuff. Every so often I post some good training videos. Any questions, I'm pretty good at getting back to people, answering questions, anything like that. And I tell everybody, anytime you have any questions about training, nutrition, what's it like to have a full-time job and fight and train and being married, I get a lot of those questions. I get a lot of questions from older individuals, men and women, who want to train and maybe get one fight in just to say that they did it and experience it. Feel free to hit me up, send me a message, send me a friend request. I get on there, I check it regularly, and I'm pretty good at answering people back and hopefully pushing somebody and giving that right motivation and that little bit of extra oomph to get them to, absolutely, give it a shot, try it out. You won't regret it. So,
most definitely, my friend. I look forward to seeing the results of February 3rd, Lion Fight Promotions. It's a tremendous attribute of Foxwood. I think you're a tremendous young man, and I can call you a young man because I got 12 years on you, my friend. I look forward to having you back on. You know, when you get the opportunity, I'll reach out to you. We'll get you scheduled maybe after your fight, and we'll have you on for a little bit longer of a segment. I'll let you get back to what you're doing, and I appreciate you joining the show, and I appreciate you sharing Lion Fights, my friend.
Not a problem. I look forward to talking to you again, Don. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much, and just one more thing, if everybody can, just tune in, check out Lion Fight. It's going to be a lot of great fights that night. And I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you, and God bless, brother.
Take
care. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Julio Pena. Set to fight February 3rd, Foxwoods, for Lion Fight Promotions. He was scheduled to be the first guest on the show, but live radio, you got to keep the show moving. I called the second guest. We were able to make that happen. Now we're going to move into the second half of the show, which is kind of our stereotypical talk of the week show. If you want to stick around for that, you're more than welcome to. That's with the Misfits of Gold. We talk about off topics, not necessarily the sport, but things that are going on in the community. We're going to go ahead and give Travis Hyland a call.
Mr. McGuire.
What's up, Travis? Welcome to the Fighter's Voice, my friend. I shaved a little bit of time, bro.
I like it.
You know, I'm going to jump off deep word because, you know, we don't have much time today. But, you know, I saw a posting on social media that kind of chapped my ass. And I've seen several others soon to follow. There was an American Indian family that basically was... I can't even think of the monument. where the four damn presidents with Mount Rushmore, and they're flipping it off. And you know, the Post stated, you know, if you don't like this country, then get the fuck out of it. Well, first of all, this was where my ancestors come from. I'm Native American. You know, most of my family, you know, is from this side of the country. You know, when you see posts like that, being that you're Native American, how pissed off does it get you? As we've already talked about before, we don't celebrate Thanksgiving because I think it's a bullshit holiday. How upsetting is it for you to see posts like that, acting like the American Indian doesn't belong here and this wasn't our land first?
I mean, you know, that's another one of those situations where, should that individual have done that? You know, yeah, maybe, maybe not. But, it, you know, in the big picture of things, man, the kind of stuff that pisses me off more is things like that Dakota Access Pipeline, you know. I mean, the last thing I saw on that was it had already begun leaking, you know, some 10,000 gallons of oil into the same river that, you know, there was this big media upheaval about these people trying to save. You know, I mean, and it's another one of those things where I don't agree with taking down history, you know, and even more relevant than Mount Rushmore, you know, is like what was going on in Charlottesville. I mean, do I agree? Do I think that Ulysses S. Grant was a great fucking person? No, I don't think Columbus was a great person. I don't think a lot of people were great people. You know, I mean, it all has to do with the times, but I don't think that we should be removing statues or tearing down things that are already built. It doesn't make any sense to me. You know, that is the history. That is what happened. And those who ignore history are condemned to repeat it.
Yes. I have to agree with you there. You know, I don't know where MF Beck is. He'll probably be joining us here shortly. You know, but I saw a documentary the other day that kind of really pissed me off, but at the same time, it opened my eyes. You know, I, for one, I drink bottled water. It's in a plastic container. Throw it away, recycle it, whatever. And then I see this documentary, and it takes you halfway across the world, but it shows you miles and miles of garbage, you know, plastic bottles just covering the ocean as if it was an island. And, you know, these people, the further they went, the worse it got. How close do you think we are as a civilization, not just America, but all of us in general, you know, with the trash situation and the way we handle it, how close do you think we are to crucially wiping out a lot of the sea life, a lot of aspects of the world that our children will never get to see?
I think that would be actually answered with another question. It's like, when you look at the resources that we as a people consume, doesn't matter what country we're from, you know what I mean? We're consuming more resources than can reproduce themselves fast enough. So it's like the wildlife's going to suffer from that. The agriculture's going to suffer from that. Like the topography is going to suffer from that. You know what I mean? Like the more shit people try to consume and like try to take over, like going, I don't know, it's like taking out national parks, like just taking over land for whatever, be like coal mining, whatever type of like oils, like it doesn't matter. Dude. Like if they're going to take like nature's land and like selfishly use it for whatever means that they see, it's going to cause certain effects on the environment. You know what I mean? Like you take out one animal out of an ecosystem and look at the change that is created because of that. So as far as fucking like the sea life, dude, like, yeah, it's going to get fucked up. I mean, what, Fukushima is still leaking, isn't it? So you look at all the shit we just dump into the ocean, dude, like, it's no fucking wonder. Yeah, like it's no wonder. It's like, what are we going to do with all that? Well, we created shit that we can't dispose of. Oh, so what are we going to do? Ah, just dump in that giant fucking pool of water. Let's see what happens. Oh, we don't need water. We're humans. We got money. You know, it's crazy fucking shit, dude. And then it's like animals start suffering. And then when the animals go out of the ecosystem, shit gets out of whack. Like, that's why people are so concerned about bees right now. You know, like, they don't think it really affects the environment that much. But it's like, dude, like, just wait till the motherfuckers are gone. Then we're going to see what happens.
Yeah, you know, we truly will. And you know, it's disheartening because, you know, as a kid, I got to grow up in Alaska. I got to see some of the truest forms of wildlife and wilderness. And that aspect, even in the state of Alaska, is disappearing. It's slower there than it is in the lower 48. But the ecosystem is just slowly dwindling away. And the thing that really caught me about this island of bottles was that, and I didn't even realize this. You know, they got all these people recycling, and they got all these bins and shit. But when it comes down to it, they actually only use a third of what is given back to be recycled, and the rest of it gets dumped into the ocean. And you know, so I look at it in two ways. I look at it's a waste of time because it's going to end up there anyway. And two is, why is the government or the state paying out monies when it's going to cost them more to get rid of the product than it is to receive the product? Do you think the recycling program in the United States is just bullshit?
I mean, we've seen it with other countries. I mean, I know that there's several countries in Scandinavia, you know, Denmark, Sweden. There's a few countries who have literally, their recycle program is so incredible that they're actually like, other countries are paying them to take their trash. They're buying trash from other countries because they're so efficient and so good at recycling, you know. And it's another one of those things, man, where it's like our government has their monies in the wrong place, you know. It's all about building bombs and building defense weapons rather than making it profitable, you know, to do things like, you know, sustainable agriculture. And make it profitable to clean up the fucking oceans and make it profitable to do these things that are helpful for everybody, you know. But instead, the only thing we give no-bid contracts to are fixing and rebuilding other countries that we blow up, when we should be giving no-bid contracts to people like there's actually a kid, I think he might be 21 now, maybe, but I became aware of this kid when he was only 17, and I believe his name is Boyan Slat. And he's actually the foremost leading person in the ocean cleanup. He invented a machine that actually sucks plastic out of the ocean and recycles it there at the machinery. So, I mean, it's, you know, the technology is there, but the problem is that we're not incentivized to do things that help people. We're only incentivized, you know, for war, essentially, in this country, and it's fucked up.
Yeah, it truly is, because you look at other countries and, you know, and I've been to several other countries, and they're so much cleaner than the United States. Like, I mean, I can't speak for Thailand and, you know, other places like that, but there's a lot of places overseas that make the United States look dirty. And in some ways, when I was there, I felt ashamed of my own country. It was like, you know, why can't we live like this? Why can't we come up with ideas like this and keep the streets, you know, pristine and keep the neighborhoods pristine? But, you know, America is just the way it's going to be. You know, something kind of pissed me off yesterday. I seen the second or third article on it. You know, the government under Trump, and I know, MF, you're a Trump supporter, and I don't know if you are, Travis, I can't remember. But, you know, I do have an issue with this aspect, because if you're going to cut state and government aspects for state workers, you know, if you're going to cut the retirements in half, then what do you do with retired senators, retired congresspeople who are getting, you know, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, $600,000, $700,000 a year for doing shit? Do you think that, in my thoughts, I think if you cut everybody's salary, let's say you're making $750,000 a year as a retired senator, if you cut your salary down to $400,000 a year, that's still an ample amount of money for you to live off of. And the other $350,000 goes back, you know, to the community, to whatever state, whatever program. Do you think if they did that across the board, do you think it would be more beneficial to the United States, or do you like Trump's idea, just cutting it at a local and state level?
I think he's on the right page as far as keeping it at like a local and a state level, because really it's like the United States is such a like a broad demographic. You know, I mean, you can't really judge it based off of like one whole and say like everybody should just do this, because it's not going to work like that, because the different demographics, different peoples, you know, even these different environments are going to create different scenarios. So you can't really say that one mold is going to fix everything. And, you know, like at the same time, I don't think there's a quick fix to any of this shit. And to correct you, I wouldn't say I'm a Trump supporter. I just like what he's doing as far as taking shit up, you know what I mean? Because I don't trust that motherfucker, not no way, no how. no politician, no real fucking dude of that type of, you're making billions of dollars, I don't trust you. Because there's something that you're doing, there's some way you're doing shit, whatever it is. Just, I like shaking shit up. Really, it's like the one thing that he has done successfully is show how fucked up the system really is, and he brought it to the light. Now, what's going to happen from that, I don't fucking know. But as far as, like, these people that, like, they get comfortable in these jobs, you know what I mean? Like, they remain stagnant. Like, it's like working for a union. If you know you don't got to worry about getting fired, are you really going to give a fuck after 30 years, after 20 years? Nah. But if we put some kind of term limits on these assholes and be like, yo, this is all based off your job, we can cut you at any fucking point in time. If you don't live up to these expectations, I don't know what to fucking tell you. You know, but it's not a quick fix, dude. It's not an easy fix. Like, all this shit took years to fuck up. Like, years to fuck up. So it's going to take probably about the same, if not double the amount, to fix this shit.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you in some aspects because, you know, you look at, I just got what I had to pay out for 2017 under Obamacare. And I got to tell you, man, you know, now I know why I'm so fucking broke. You know, the amount of money that I paid out well over, you know, and I still owe on this, but according to the federal government, I'm responsible for $121,000 of my medical expenses for the year 2017. Now, can I pay that? No. You know, people are talking about Trump is looking at reforming Medicare, you know, and that he's gonna hurt the middle class. You know, in my eyes, I'm open to see what he's willing to do because the past, you know, 4 years under Obama, I watched what came out of my pocket go from $15,000 a year to $50,000 a year to $80,000 a year, now to $121,000, and I don't know where I'm going to come up with the money. You know, I have no clue where, you know, I'm supposed to do this. You know, so I look at it in two ways. You know, the system is broke, like you said. It needs to be fixed. But at the same time, you know, I'm on a fixed income. I can only afford to pay out so much. You know, my prescription costs alone are almost $9,000 a year on top of the $121,000 that I owed. So when you look at all of it in a nutshell, it truly is broken, like you said. Now, the only aspect to Trump that I really have a major issue with is some of his, you know, new agenda crosses the board and it gets passed, then California's probably going to be one of the most desolate states in the nation. What are your thoughts?
You want to bring us some shit about California? Fucking bring it on, dude. Bring on the floods. This state has gone so fucking ass backwards on just how things are fucking ran. And, like, dude, like, I'm not saying I don't have compassion for people, because I do. But it's just when the politicians clearly are raping us, taking our money, dude, just screwing us in every way, shape, or form that they can, and then they disguise it with some fucking beautifully painted just bullshit and make them think that they actually give a shit about us. And then they're taking a lot of these immigrants that are here working hard, and they're giving them kind of a bad name because it's like they're bringing them here for what fucking reason? It's like almost like a show and tell, you know what I mean? Like it's fucking leverage. So it's like these people are getting used, these people are getting fucked, and it's a bunch of these fucking rich motherfuckers that are telling you that other rich motherfuckers are bad. So as far as it goes, like, I want to see some chaos. I want to see some shit fucking happen. Let him pass some shit that's going to fucking cause some controversy. I don't give a fuck. Let something else fucking happen that's different than what's been happening. That's my fucking strong opinion.
Get MF on a roll. Hey, Travis, he's talking so much. You're being quiet over there. What are you learning from the master?
No, absolutely, man. Always. MF's got a little more of a actual technical version of it. I mean, at this point, man, I got to say, I'm more of an anarchist at this point, dude. I have no faith in large government. I think everything should be handled at a state level and at a local level. And honestly, until I can vote for the president, all of my senators and congressmen, until I can vote for every law on my phone at the convenience of, you know, having it in my pocket where I can enter my Social Security number and, you know, vote that way, you know, I can't support it.
Yeah, you know, I have to agree with you. You know, some issues I agree with. You know, I watched Trump speak today, and, you know, to look at some of the comments, to look at some of the things that people were saying, and you know, it was like, that's where I got really pissed off today, was because somebody on there, like I said earlier, said, if you don't like it, go back to your country. Well, motherfucker, this is my country. You know, where am I supposed to go to if my ancestors were born here? You know, and so I found it kind of whimsical in a way. But, you know, I kind of want to change ships a little bit here. You know, for the first time, I think, ever, I finally had enough of this transgender shit. You know, the other day, you know, I saw this little boy caught it, you know, this father caught this little boy putting on makeup. And then he put it out there on Facebook, what would you do if this was your son? And, you know, I honestly said I would beat his ass and I would take away everything that he had an opportunity to do. He wouldn't see the outside of, you know, outside of the house unless he went to school. But once he turned 18, if he was still that way, then he could go about his business. And people in my life said that that was cruel. It wasn't right of me. But, you know, I'm so sick of seeing these little kids being forced or being pushed into a thought that, you know, they can decide what sex they want to be. The other day I seen a video of these little babies, you know, 3, 4, 5 years old, that are being brought to these daycares that are now transgender daycare. You know, why is this issue excelling in the community?
Man, it's rampant. I mean, and, you know, us being out here in California, dude, we are in the absolute center and hub of it. You know, and it's another one of those things, man, where people are just getting more and more and more disconnected with reality. You know, it's that thing when you were a little kid, when it's like as soon as one person gets a rule for them passed, everybody else wants to bitch and whine and complain until they get their rule passed. And it's, you know, it's harmful to society in the sheer fact that we're not being realistic with the science and with the logic in front of us, you know. I mean, one of the hugest issues, not to bring it back to politics at all, but one of the hugest issues I have with the Trump administration is the fact that they are ignoring climate science, you know. And anytime you're ignoring the things that are proven and replicatable and that we can, you know, we know for a fact this is wood, this is solid, you can touch it, you can measure it, you can put it on a scale, and it says the same thing every time. You know, once we start getting away from that and getting into magical la-la fairyland where if you bitch long enough and get in, you know, fill out the proper paperwork and get enough bureaucracy, you can be a fox or a gender, or you can go back and be whatever you feel like being this way. I mean, personally, I'm of the thought that children shouldn't drive until they're 21. Until your prefrontal cortex develops at the age of 25, I don't think you should be allowed to make adult decisions because your brain isn't developed. And honestly, I think, you know, all the parents, and, you know, it's way more rampant than you think. I just watched an entire Vice piece on it, you know, of, like you're saying, 3 and 4 year old little boys and little girls who they just repeat whatever their parents say. And you can tell that it's their parents who have maybe saw them, you know, playing with a doll one time. And rather than thinking, oh, hey, this 2 year old just doesn't know any better, or, hey, maybe it's just a phase, you know, they freak out. Now it's like, oh, they're trapped in the wrong body. And these kids are growing up being brainwashed. I don't understand how it isn't child abuse to give your 3-year-old, 4-year-old, fuck, to give your 14-year-old kid hormone blockers. I don't understand how that's not child abuse.
Most definitely. You know, it's crazy. You know, of course, I'm not ashamed to say my age, but, you know, I go back to when I was a little kid and, you know, maybe my worst trait is to look at the past. But, you know, I've had a conversation with a lot of people that are older than me and people that are younger than myself that look at life, you know, pretty much the same way that anybody on this show does. And, you know, I've come up with the assumption or the thought that society is truly degressing. You know, things are going backwards. You know, you look at the Tide Pod Challenge, you look at transgender, you look at how people bully and things like this. And, you know, to me, the correlation, like we talked about last week, with murders being allowed on Facebook and them saying it doesn't violate community standards, to me, either society is just lost as a whole, or we're at a point that society can no longer grow as a community, that it's all a bunch of sheeple that are just truly following the masses. And if you look at it in that aspect, the outcome can't be great. It could only be one of the most horrific things that will happen in our country. What are your thoughts, MF?
I mean, I absolutely agree. You know, it's one of those things that you see it with all of the great civilizations, you know, throughout time, throughout Rome. You know, every great empire falls, unfortunately. And when you have so many weak people in your culture, and I do mean that both physically and mentally, you know, we are living in a nation where, for the first time ever, 70% of our adults are morbidly obese. You know, I mean, 70% of our adults can't take care of themselves if the power goes out, you know. And we're just getting more and more weak people, and we're making everything easier and easier to be a weak, do-nothing person and still be able to live and have food, you know, delivered to your house by drone. And it's changing society. It's changing what people are. You know, this, we're already so out of touch with the nature of, you know, what you would call humanity, being that we all have our little phones and our own little personal bubbles. And, you know, we're so disconnected from the tribe and the community. But it's like now we're getting into a place where it's not even reality. It's not even based into what's actually going on around you. It's based on to how you're feeling in this particular day, you know, and it takes us from being able to share with one another and being able to conversate and having these real human connections. And when the only kind of interaction you're getting is through your, you know, through your fucking phone, and you're not actually having a conversation with people, man, it's going to be weird to see the children growing up today not only having the access to whatever information they want instantly, having access to anything like pornography or murder videos instantaneously, but also having things where, you know, I would imagine by the time that they're 15, the majority of their interaction is going to be through a television screen or through their phone, through texting, rather than actual conversations with people.
You know, I have to agree with you, you know. Sorry, it cut me off guard. I've seen a picture that, because I'm multi-sponsored, you know, it's kind of weird. We talk about the correlation between people and people truly striving for one thing. And, you know, I'm signed by 3 apparel companies, and, of course, it's kind of like walking on eggshells sometimes. And today I decided to post a picture of me wearing 86er gear, which I usually post me wearing finished because they're the ones that sponsor the show. And, you know, it kind of caught me off guard to have the owner of Finished MMA comment on the 86ers post and say, "God bless you, my brother, one team, one dream." You know, that type of shit reinstills my faith in some aspects in life. You know, not everybody is out to get everybody. Not everybody is out to screw somebody over. You know, when you look at it, that, do you think that hope is lost for us people that truly believe in community, brotherhood, /sisterhood, keeping things straight, keeping things the way they should be? Do you think that hope is lost, or do you think that we all have the ability to bring things back to where they need to be?
Personally, man, I don't really even like the thought of hope, the term of hope, the word hope. To me, hope already means that in some way, shape, or form, you've already accepted giving up, you've already accepted failure, or some kind of result, you know what I mean? Do I still think there would be, like, a form of hope or whatever? I believe it's all on what the people do. I'm definitely slowly and steadily losing my faith in humanity, absolutely. Every day, I think I fucking have a little bit more, and it's like, nope, something proves me to where it's like I was right all along. But it's like there's select few. It's like you come across people that you got like minds that everybody wants the same goal. You know what I mean? Like, we all want the community. So in turn, it gives us something greater to work for. So I think if people just kind of found that, whatever that is, you know what I mean? Some reason to come together with people, not bicker over our differences, not, you know, bicker and fight over sports or politics or who's on this or who's doing this or my opinion, this boy, girl, it doesn't matter, dude. Like, if we can all come together and somehow find whatever that is that can bring us together to actually, like, try to make the community grow, or try to not make, but, you know, get the community to grow. But people have to have that like-minded, and it's just right now the way this culture works is everybody's all about me, you know. You do you, boo-boo. Everybody wants their own fucking piece of the pie. Everybody wants to grow all on their own. And it's because of the selfish needs of a lot of people, you know, me including when I was younger. It's just, it is crazy. Everybody's focusing on themselves so much that they lose sight of the bigger picture.
You know, I have to agree with you. You know, it's like, I look at last night's show and, you know, it got all screwed up, man. I confirm, reconfirm, you know, like I was telling you earlier, you know, I have a live show. You know, I choose to do live because it's the only way to do a show. And, you know, then you have somebody not show up. I'm all right at asking questions, but I suck at filling airtime. I can guarantee you that much, you know. But, you know, that's the thing that I'm finding to be more of an issue nowadays is, you know, you can affirm, you can confirm, you can talk to them minutes before a show, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the guest is going to show up. People have taken to the opinion that they're going to do what they want to do in life, and it doesn't matter who they hurt or who they screw over. And I'm seeing this to be kind of a trait that is carrying on. And, you know, I'm different. So I think in a lot of ways, you know, me being the old school guy that I am, you know, It disappoints me. It doesn't piss me off, but it disappoints me. You know, that when I have a coach that's scheduled to come on, you know, and is confirmed, then I you know, right as soon as I'm supposed to bring him on, I get a text saying I'm not going to be available for 20-25 minutes. You know, those people don't take, you know, in the thought that my show is live and you're basically screwing me over. Mm-hmm. You know, like the, and then today, you know, go to start out, you know, I had Julio Pena on for Lion Fights, scheduled 30 minutes before your slot, talked to him, and this is a deputy sheriff, and I hit him, didn't answer. So it was like, you got to be kidding me, you know. And some regards, it makes me mad to the point that I go, why in the hell am I doing this if these people aren't going to pay enough respect to show up when they're promised? You know, but I think if I walk away from the show and I walk away from the sport and the journalist side, I think it'd be a great disrespect to you and all the others that show up. When you look at that aspect of my thought, you know, where should I go with this? Because, you know, I honestly am contemplating walking away from radio, even though I still have a contract to fulfill. But the thing of it is, you know, you can, it goes back to that old saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. How do I fix this issue with the way society is today without even giving thought towards others?
Man, it's like one of those, it's like an old saying, you know, it's, you fool me once, it's shame on you. You fool me twice, it's shame on me. So, like, I always give people, I'll give them enough trust until they prove me otherwise. But once they prove me otherwise, it's going to take a lot more than you expect to get that back. It's not necessarily like the fact of like trusting people. It's just relying on certain aspects, you know. So it's just like if you continue to let people do that, then they will continue to do that. I don't know. It's not an easy answer again, dude. You always ask fucking hard questions.
Right, whatever. You know, Travis is being kind of quiet today, you know, and that's unusual. I like to be quiet. What was that?
Okay.
Travis ain't going to answer me because he's busy. But, no, when, you know, Travis, I like because you're outspoken, you know. You're a very smart young man. You're very... Actually, you're wise among your years. You know, when you hear me and MF talk and you hear thoughts of how we can change things, how we can correlate things, you know, what is it like for someone your age, someone you know, maturing into this world that is so fucked up. How do you maintain that stability?
Man, I think my biggest personal issue right now would be trying not to get jaded by all of it, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm 27 years old, and I already feel like a crotchety old fuck who's just bitching about the younger generation and bitching about the older generation and what they left us, you know? So it's kind of like, it's kind of a constant struggle. But at the same time, you know, one of the big things I think that ML has helped me learn and kind of a theme that we have going on over here is being able to adapt to any fucking situation, you know? And it's like, yeah, we're in a fucked up political situation. We're in a fucked up socioeconomical situation. But we have to, you know, look at the world for what it really is. And that comes down to the whole, you know, losing your ego and your biases and just kind of seeing things objectively, you know. And so it's one of those things where we have to accept the world and the reality around us. But yet we also have to be flexible enough to adapt to that situation and still be able to thrive in the situation around us, you know. I mean, it just kind of one of those situations where you got to – one good person, you know, is worth 1,000 acquaintances, you know. And if you can find that one good person who's a little bit smarter than you, who has a similar mind, who doesn't have the ego where it's all about them, you know, that person is like gold. And that person can help you become a better person, and it can help you, you know, do the things that you need to do and strive to be a better person. You know, that's one of the great things about us is, you know, we all came together because of fighting, but now there's several of us, you know, who have broken off and who are doing our own things. You know, we have a business here that's coming out real, real soon, you know? So it's one of those things where you got to adapt to the situation. You got to adapt to the times, no matter how fucked up or a time or situation that you're in.
You know, I have to agree with you. Now, I know your guys' time is short on today's show because of, you know, prior guests that I had on. Next week, I promise that we're going to do a full hour of the Misfits of Gold weekly special because, you know, we didn't even have really time to, touch on a lot of the topics that we usually do. You know, one thing I do, I look forward to the show. It sucked the 3 weeks that we missed, and then when I was in the hospital, it sucked that time because, you know, being able to get your thoughts out there and hear others' thoughts, and they might not agree with you, but to have you guys, you know, at least hear me correlate where I'm coming from and give me the feedback on your thoughts, it truly helps me through my day and each and every week. And this show is something that I truly look forward to because not often do you get a show where people can come on and just talk about anything and everything across the board and it not matter because we're just stating, you know, fact and we're stating our opinions. But at the same time, the people that are listening, we're letting them know that, you know, they may not be the only one that have these types of thoughts. And it may change someone's life, may help somebody. For the best part, you know, I take away from it. And that's, you know, that might sound selfish, but I truly love this show, man.
Oh yeah, dude, it's fun. We definitely, I enjoy it. I don't know about the other guys.
it's definitely wonderful, man. You bring up a lot of topics too that you know I haven't necessarily even thought about or seen. So it's great to be able to get a completely different perspective, you know, from halfway across the other side of the United States and bring it over to here.
Well, you know that's why I love this show because you know. Even though Mr. Toomer's not on here so often, it's always fun to have Smile and Sam. But, you know, the thing of it is like I said, we can all have a discussion and nobody gets butthurt. Nobody walks away pissed off. And that's how life truly should be. You know, before I let you guys go, though, we got to get MF Beck's random thought of the week. You know, I so look forward to this. Usually he doesn't give me an exact thought. He might give me a quote, but we're gonna get something out of him anyway.
Yep, I got something for you. And actually, Sam and I were just talking about this last week. If you learn how to learn one thing, you can learn anything. Marinate on that.
True, true. You know, touche. I'm going to toss the mic over to Travis Hyland. Travis, if there's anything else you'd like to add to the program, the floor is yours, my friends.
No, just build on MF sentiment, man. You know,
got to go, Don. I had to cut it quick.
All right,
yeah.
Peace, bro.
But yeah, just to build on what MF said, you know, one of the best things you can do in life is to go out there and learn something new. And you might just go out there and, you know, start shooting a bow. You might even start working out. Anything. Anything that you do can be applied into a million other ways. It's all about just learning how to apply it.
I have to agree with that, man. That's very well said. You know, like I said, I just think that it's tremendous that we can come together. And, you know, like you said, it was initially fighting that brought us together, but now we truly are a family. Actually, I will be out there in April. I just set the itinerary with my sponsors to be out there. I will be landing in San Jose at the beginning of the first week of April, and I'll be out there until the end of April. So I get the first week in Sacramento, so we'll be able to hook up. We'll be able to break bread and finally sit down and meet each other for the first time and get this friendship in full swing. It's going to be kind of a cool deal. I'm going out there. I'll be at TAM, and then I'll be at AKA, and then I'll be at Team Body Shop, and then we're all going to get together and go on a deep-sea fishing trip at the end of this thing. So it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to April. I'm looking forward to breaking bread with you and MF and Sam. And, you know, I truly appreciate this show, and I appreciate you coming on each and every time and sharing your thoughts and sentiments, man. I wish you the best of luck, my friend. Until next week, thank you for coming on, homie.
It'll be a beautiful thing, Don. Thank you.
All right, bro. You have a good day, man, and God bless you, homie. We'll talk to you later. Ladies and gentlemen, that was MF Beck and Travis Hyland, a Misfits of Gold weekly special. We usually do an hour long. We cut it short today because some screw-ups in scheduling. We'll get them on for a full week next week. It's a show just based on life. And I want to thank Finished MMA, Juan Martinez, you know, the sponsor of the show. Without him, we wouldn't exist. I want to thank the 86ers.net, Alfred and Freddie, United Way Merced, and Affliction. You know, it's been a long week. Got one more show tomorrow, and I'm looking forward to it. On that note, you have a good day, and God bless.
Execution, no! of the agility of the team.